Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, I was just informed by a source. Yeah, no, Joe Mixon does not get to keep that chain that they put around his neck.
Well, yeah, definitely. If it says Player of the Week on it, then yeah, that's their turnover chain type thing.
For
their championship belt. Like the Astros do.
The cost was also brought up to me as part of the reason. It's an expensive chain.
It's an expensive chain, yeah. And I would imagine, too, that then it becomes into, like, all right, you got to entrust somebody with that really expensive chain for an entire week.
Yeah.
I wonder whoever commissioned it. Do we know who commissioned it? I hope they've got insurance on it, I suppose.
I don't have that information. I think the way I would commission this thing would be that he gets to hang it in his locker until somebody else wins the Player of the Week.
Yeah.
Although then you have like $100,000 chain just hanging in a locker right there. That's probably, you know, not.
It's not. It's not like there aren't several $100,000 chains hanging in lockers. You have a locker in your locker. Also,
yeah.
They are genuine lockers. You have a little strong box usually with a whatever.
Yeah.
It's probably a thumbnail print or something.
Retinal.
These days,
yeah. Like you do a little eye facial recognition thing. Astros lose last night to the A's as we welcome you back in 8 o'clock hour here on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. They lose to the A's 5-4. Hunter Brown, not great last night. 5 earned runs in 5 innings. A lot of guys on base. He's able to pitch out of a couple of jams, but it just wasn't his best night. Here was Joe Espada on Hunter Brown.
A lot of pitches too. I think he did get some big strikeouts in big moments. But, you know, I thought that deep counts, you know, I seen him, he kind of sprayed this, you know, sprayed the zone a little bit too much. Like he wasn't putting hitters away more efficiently than he's done in the past. But, you know, he threw the ball well enough, gave us a chance there. And, you know, we had some opportunities and we just couldn't capitalize.
Yeah, 5-4, the final score. They got a little rally going late, couldn't get it done. The big thing
it was like Espada said. I mean, it was just that kind of a night where just even in his first out, he didn't throw a single strike. Partly by design, but not as much by design as you'd want it to be. But it's not anything that makes me worry about Hunter Brown. It's the classic, okay, not a great outing by any given starting pitcher. So I still remain firmly confident in Hunter Brown.
Yeah, Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez are not in tryout mode right now. They're in your rotation for the postseason. All the other guys are, it's American Idol with the other guys in this thing right now. It's wide open. The big story coming out of this game was Jose Altuve leaving the game. 5th inning, I think, he was up to the plate. And appeared to tweak something on a swing that made it a two-strike count. Here's what it sounded like on the broadcast.
Used his timeout, then called for the manager to talk to him. Something with his twisting motion, it seems like he's showing.
Yeah, he doesn't look comfortable at all.
We'll see what this next swing looks like here, 2-2. He's not even going to swing. He's going to bunt, and that's a strikeout. That's not a good sign. See if he stays in the game. That's not what you want to see with Altuve bunting the two strikes, not wanting to swing them.
So he came out of the game. The baseball fan in me that wanted them to win the game was like, okay, would they have had a better chance of getting somebody on base there with Altuve just throwing the at-bat away with a bunt on two strikes or letting somebody else come in and, you know, they'd have to inherit Altuve's count.
Yeah. I wonder if Altuve, you know, that's where Altuve's kind nature may have actually been bad for the team, and that he didn't want to have to hand that off to somebody.
Saddle like,
here,
somebody.
Here with, you go. Yeah. I pooped this into my hand, and now it's yours.
Yes.
enjoy the corn I ate 36 hours ago.
See, you would ruin Mark Sanchez's career.
Altuve would never do that.
No, he would never. He would never do that. God, I hope not. And I hope none of you listening would ever do that. Here was Altuve after the game. This is about a minute of audio. He met with the media. They were peppering him with questions because I think what people want to know is, Is this the same as what happened to you last year when you strained an oblique and you missed a whole bunch of time? Here was Altuve answering all the questions about his injury last year.
How did you feel in that swing or during that at bat?
Yeah, just felt a little something on the side, but on the right side, and decide to not take another swing.
Had it been bothering you before?
No.
Just on that one swing.
You had oblique issues last year. Is this in any way comparable?
Nope. Not the same. Yeah.
How's it different?
I don't know. I'll tell you tomorrow. Like, sometimes you have to wait until the next day and see how you feel.
What kind of a treatment you just get at this point?
I just wait until, I think it's too early to get something done. Wait until tomorrow, see how I feel, and go from there.
How frustrating is this to happen now with October so close?
Yeah, no, like I said, I'm not really worried. Like I said, maybe I just wake up tomorrow and I'm good to go. So we don't really want to take any decisions tonight, because, you know, normally in an injury you wait until the next day and see how you feel.
So he was pretty emphatic about two things, I thought. One, at the end there, he said, I'm not really worried. And the other thing, like, he kind of cut it off quickly when he was asked about the similarity with whatever this is to whatever it was he had last year. He was like, is this the same as the oblique? No.
Yeah.
No. And then, but then he did say, I got to see how I feel when I wake up this morning. This is a big morning, man. They play a 1:10 first pitch today, and the lineup might be out before you and I are off the air. I don't expect Altuve to play today. I don't think Espada would let Altuve play today.
I wonder if there's anybody, can somebody who was at the same car drop-off line at his kid's school or anything tell us exactly how he looked?
Yeah.
Did it look like he was driving tentatively or anything
as
he dropped his kids off at school? I don't know what his morning routine is like.
I assume
it doesn't involve irresponsible massages like Carlos Correa or something.
If you call in with that information, we will give you a ding.
How are we going to verify that whoever's calling in actually isn't making it up? I don't want to get
Maybe somebody just looking for free dings right now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll just dole those out to anybody.
We'll let Ben handle that.
I think I would take him at his word that it was just, you know, and it, I don't know, this shouldn't matter. The fact that it wasn't a crazy wild swing or anything, if it had been a classic Altuve reaching for something 9 inches outside the strike zone, and then he got hurt after that, I'd be more concerned. He got fooled on the pitch, and maybe, you know, pulled it a little bitter with the uncertainty of the swing. It didn't look ugly. So I'm hoping it's just a minor little tweak. The fact that he stayed in, either, you know, it didn't seem to bunt. Okay, yeah, that's right. The fact that he stayed in would have made me feel a lot better if he actually took a swing, but he bunted with two strikes.
It does nothing for me. It was like the fifth or sixth inning. It was the middle of the game.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other injury, Chaz McCormick is going to the IL. Here's Joe Espada on Chaz's injury.
Oh, yeah. So Chaz has a small fracture in his right hand. So obviously that will be an IL.
Then rolling out the rest of the year?
I can't tell. I can't give you a timeline. Just right now, it's just, you know, obviously IL.
Do you have a corresponding move?
Not yet.
No. All right, so nothing for a corresponding move. Let's hear from Chaz. We haven't heard from Chaz yet. I feel bad for Chaz. He was finally getting into his groove. Here was Chaz McCormick talking to the media about this injury.
It sucks. It's disappointing. It's really disappointed. Just want to be out here trying to help the team win, especially towards the end of the season, going to the playoffs. It's disappointed. Disappointing season overall, and just not the way I wanted it to happen. Just because I've been feeling good. That's crappy. I was feeling like myself finally, and then this happened. And, you know, hopefully, but I'll be back.
Sean, you know what, Sean? I'm annoyed with you. You're bringing me down this morning.
Why?
I'm blaming you for the Astros being in the situation they're in, where they've dropped a couple to the A's. The Mariners actually figured out a way to win on a night where the Astros lost, and so they lose a game in the division lead. And those are two depressing sound bites that we just played.
It's the news.
You ever hear the term "kill the messenger"? a lot of times people say "don't kill the messenger." Screw that. That's soft.
Hey, man.
I kill the messenger. And right now, you're the messenger, and I'm not happy about it, okay?
I don't want to sit here if it's not puppy dogs and ice cream this morning, man. You got to be here It is a little depressing.
And now you're invoking the memory of Dusty and Chaz going out for frozen yogurt, and now I got
banana pudding.
Banana pudding.
Banana pudding.
Of I don't know of a tasty treat. A tasty that's all. Treat. Of tasty viscous retreat treat. Oh, whatever. Viscous retreat is a whole other story. The I think that. Chaz, the unfortunate thing is that it seemed like he started to get back into his groove again.
Right.
Figured out how to hit a fastball.
Right.
It's an important thing to be able to do in Major League Baseball. Altuve, I've got my fingers crossed. I am the person who was confident that Kyle Tucker would return the actual day after he got hit in the shin. And then he didn't come back for, I think it was like 7 years after that. But so I'm not sitting here, you know, trying to, you know, lie to anybody. But I feel like with Altuve, it might just be a little muscle strain. It's very possible that's all it is. And he wakes up this morning feeling groovy.
Yeah, I hope so, man.
I don't expect him to play today.
And if
I don't expect him to play less than 24 hours after he's trained.
If the news is good. Then come tomorrow, I will play the flowery, happy cuts about Altuve being perfectly healthy.
Okay.
But I can't, you know, I'm not going to hide from this news of Chaz's broken finger and Altuve's little owie in his ribcage.
You know the thing that's annoying about Kyle Tucker's situation and where it filters over into every bit of news that you get about an injury from the Astros is that I do believe that, like they said, eventually. That it was really hard. You know, a lot of times when they're swelling, the imaging doesn't tell you everything. And people don't like believing that because we live in this day and age where you watch enough crime dramas that you think there's DNA everywhere and you can do it. You know, the lawyers have to deal with this. It's that they expect, these juries expect DNA evidence for every little crime to be conclusive. And it's just not that way. Likewise with medical imaging. There, you can't always see exactly what's going on, and there can be a tiny fracture that you don't see. But it's somewhere, like, it's some in that window of time between when he was injured and when he finally came back, they could have just said that.
Right.
You know, they could have said, you know what, we didn't really quite know, and it turned out it was more serious than we thought. Instead of just trying to feed us candy and lies about him making progress, that's the frustrating part. So that's why... That's why people are naturally skeptical when they hear somebody say, well, it's day to day, because they just, you don't feel like you're ever going to get the straight scoop.
Yeah, and the Astros have been the masters at that for the last however many years, for sure.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Message, let's just be real. The Astros come back from sucking to start the year is awesome, fun to watch, but as a legit World Series contender, they never were one. Too many errors, don't win close games. Pitching is a roller coaster. Closer is a roller coaster. Let me pause right there. Hater's not much of a roller. Hater straightened things out real quick just to finish this off. And then the texter says Verlander is shot worse than Deshaun Watson. I don't know if you saw this, Seth, if you saw the tweet, but apparently over on 790 yesterday morning, Dana Brown was doing a hit. And this made me nervous when I saw this quote from the interview talking about Verlander. This is Dana Brown talking about Verlander. Quote, Velo was up to 97 miles an hour, but JV's command is a little off. Pay attention to the back of the baseball card. They will show up and get it done. He will be fine, and it's about location. So, I saw that, and I said, man, Verlander doesn't even need to really get into the same, you know, if we're talking about like a neighborhood here, he doesn't need to be on the same street as Spencer Arrighetti and Yusei Kikuchi. If he's just inside the gate of the neighborhood, that dude is getting the start in the playoffs ahead of those guys.
Yeah, I guess this is the thing I would say to the listener, that there's many, many reasons that, yes, you might very well indeed be correct. You look at this, you look at the back of the baseball card on the roster right now, and a lot of them don't even have baseball cards. You can't do it. You know, unless, I don't know, they're like whatever niche the minor league baseball trading card market there is, there's not a lot of baseball cards out there on the field at any given time.
Look at the back of their NFT. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Look at the back of the NIL deal they had at Georgetown.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know. But since that first 36-game disaster, they have been the best team in Major League Baseball. Like, they've done really good things despite all those challenges. The graphic they put up the other day of the Astros versus good teams, I can't remember which benchmark they used, but they've been the best in the league at beating the better teams in the league. Mm-hmm. So they've been very good against good baseball teams.
Yes.
The Yankees, by the way, in classic Yankee fashion as of the last few years, have been awful versus good teams.
Yep.
So baseball is way, 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 way too random a sport to say, nope, this team could never make a playoff run or this team's not good enough. It's just not, they're not up to the same caliber or standard of previous Astros championship teams. But we know full well that teams like the Nationals can be abysmal in the first half of the season and then beat a team like the Astros, who had one of their best teams that year in this run. There's no part of me that will ever say, honestly, any team that's in the playoffs these days can't win a World Series, but the challenges are vast and mighty.
I would say of all, like, and I'm just going to focus on the American League because I don't focus on the National League too much. I'm just, because that's where I look at the standings. And so you got the Yankees and the Guardians both leading their divisions, right? Well, it might be the Orioles right now. I know the Orioles and Yankees are in a dogfight. I haven't looked to see who's leading the East. Whoever's leading the East is leading the American League, and the other one is the top wild card team. So whoever wins the East, then you got the Guardians in the Central, and then you got other playoff teams. I would say if you were just conducting some sort of, like, if you were drafting certain aspects of all the teams that could be in the playoffs, I think that the combination of having Yordan Alvarez on this team and the top two starters, I think they are the envy of practically every team in the American League. I think there's a good chance that Yordan, and I know Aaron Judge is having a monster year. I know he is. I know Bobby Witt Jr. is having a monster year. Bobby Witt Jr. has never played a playoff game, and Aaron Judge sucks in the playoffs. You've got potentially the guy who's the best hitter in the postseason on your roster, and you've got the best top two starters going into the play. And I say this even with Hunter Brown pitching the way he did last night. Hunter Brown has been dynamite for the last 3 months, and Fromber has been Fromber deluxe for the last few months. I think, you know, the Astros get into the dance. I think those two things are the envy of a lot of other teams in the postseason, having Yordan as your game wrecker and having those two guys at the top of your rotation. I think that gives you a really good, way more than a puncher's chance of getting to an eighth straight ALCS.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, like, I guess the counter argument against my own argument would be just that you can't just completely discount the first part of the season either. You know, it's a long season. But especially you can have a tail end of it the same way you had at the start of it all, that the power they have of their top line guys is it's a factor.
That top four is really good. Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I think we're one game in with the Texans, but I think we already have an early kind of position controversy for Texan fans wondering, when is this guy going to start to get more snaps and become the starter? We'll tell you who it is coming up next.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.